Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the History of Rock podcast. His name is Brandon. He's the DJ.
His name is Shim. He's the rock star. Class is in session. We're talking about the band Korn. We were able to get through the self-titled album in the previous episode. We wrapped things up with, in April of 1996, the band went on to record their second album at Indigo Ranch Studios in Malibu.
And then we come to the record that got me introduced to this band and everyone else in Sick Puppies and all the kids that we were hanging out with at the time. We were the cool kids as far as we were concerned at the time. We knew Korn. We liked Korn. Everyone else thought we were emo freaks that were going to do satanic rituals because we were listening to...
Was emo a thing back then?
No, but they just dark, stupid, goth, fucking culty. And they were like, that's not music. So
quick side note, yeah. Doing that stuff. I always know that if I ever need to get my wife in a good mood, I can play either the breakdown in Freak on a Leash or the song Twist from Life is Peachy, because she fucking loves it when he does that.
Really?
Yeah, it's great too.
That's
man.
Awesome. So Life is Peachy was released October 15th, 1996. It didn't get a ton of airplay, but still did well on the charts, debuting at number 3 on the Billboard 200. That would have dumbfounded a lot of people in the record game at the time. Number 3, that's significant.
Yeah, so the first single, No Place to Hide, got them a Grammy nomination for Best Metal Performance. The second single, Adidas, was the band's first charting single on Billboard's Bubbling Under Hot 100. These fucking titles. It reached number 13 on that list.
Korn ended up on the 1997 Lollapalooza tour, but had to drop out after Monkey was diagnosed with viral meningitis. What's up with that?
Does not sound enjoyable in any way, shape, or form. I had to backpedal here a little bit because I wanted to make sure that because debuting at number 3, when I wrote it, it seemed oddly high for me, but I don't want to take up too much time.
Are we thinking that might have actually been mixed up with Follow the Leader?
No, it was. It says here, it says it peaked at number 1 in New Zealand. It also peaked at number 3 on the Billboard 200.
Yeah.
Shit. So yeah, man. So that was, I mean, it was pretty goddamn big. So
this next thing you're about to say, I didn't know this. Go ahead.
So during their time off, they started their own label. It was called Elementary Records, so they could sign and introduce new bands. And it was mostly run by Davis, but Silveria influenced the first signing, which happened to be Orgy.
Right. See, I didn't know anything about this stuff. And I'm wondering, and maybe we're going to get to this, did these guys sign Limp Bizkit?
No, they were heavily influenced. They kind of helped move things along for Limp Bizkit, but they didn't sign them to Elementary at all. I remember the big signings for Elementary. It was Orgy and Deadzy, I think, were kind of the two big acts. And of course, if you know Orgy, it was their cover of Blue Monday was big. The song that I personally really, really liked from Orgy was Opticon, but that's for another time. So go check out that song.
So now we're getting into the fun stuff. Around this time, a student in Michigan was suspended for a day for wearing a Korn t-shirt to school.
God.
Gretchen Plues, better than a free hug shirt. Kids got banned from wearing free hug shirts back then because they thought it was just a way for boys to get a feel on the girls. Gretchen Plues, the high school's assistant principal, said that Korn music is indecent, vulgar, obscene, and intends to be insulting. Intends to be insulting.
Right.
The band ended up donating hundreds of free t-shirts that were given away outside the school.
Boom.
Now that's some smart management.
Face. I still remember back then. So back mid to late 90s, Korn was one of those bands that was frequently kind of looked at as like, oh my God, like who are these guys? Marilyn Manson, obviously another one that would get that stuff. Like his whole thing was he was missing the rib.
Yeah.
So he could
suck his own.
His own lollipop. Korn ended up filing a cease and desist order against Plues and the school district for their comments. They also threatened a multi-million-dollar lawsuit, but both actions were ultimately dropped because the band members' personal lives just kind of got in the way. It really wasn't worth it.
What does that mean? It got in the way of their personal lives. Do you have any? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, that's all the information that I was really able to find. but when you do something like that, it can be very taxing on you because there's a lot of shit that you need to do, right? So from everything that I read, it was essentially the band kind of looked at it and they were like, hey, we don't like we've moved on. We gave away the t-shirts. This isn't going to affect us anymore. Like, we don't have to worry about this. If anything, it was solid promotion for the band, because anybody who would have sided with the school district was already going to side with the school district.
Yeah.
Anybody who heard the story and was going to side with Korn and maybe had not heard of Korn, it was great promotion for the band.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It's a great idea to do that. So from 1993 to 97, the band was known for wearing Adidas. In 1998, they tried to sign a deal with Adidas, but the brand told them, "We do sports, not music," which wasn't entirely true because they did have a deal with Run DMC.
And for anybody who's curious, it's Adidas.
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 I'm going to Rain Man my way through the whole podcast. Adidas.
So
Adidas.
Puma would end up jumping all over this opportunity. And dude, I'm telling you, this is how it fucking worked. Puma, and I remember Pony as well. Was Puma. Another what?
Yeah, Puma.
It's not puke. It's Puma.
Yeah. Puma. Puma.
So
Puma,
they would,
instead of Adidas.
So they would jump at the opportunity.
Thank God they didn't go with Nike.
Oh, Jesus. So they signed a $500,000 deal with Korn, which included their music in the ads. And Davis said, "That's more than Adidas ever did for us. It wasn't a sellout thing. It was about respect."
Really?
That's what he said.
Yeah. Okay. While the band was recording their third album, Follow the Leader, they produced a weekly online TV show called Korn TV. This show documented the recording of the album and had special guests Ron Jeremy, Limp Bizkit, and 311. Fans could also call in and ask the band questions. Did you watch that? Because that never made it to Australia.
I tried, and we never had the internet connection to do it, man. And that was because this is...
So it wasn't on TV ever. You could only watch it online.
This was a website thing. And I watched a lot of it after the fact when we got broadband internet and we were able to watch. And remember, this is pre-YouTube and everything. So all the shit that they were putting out there is going through their channels and their stuff. And it was one of those situations where I didn't have the bandwidth really to check. I mean, there was a lot of these things
back then.
What kind of rich ass fucking kids are they broadcasting to, right?
Yeah.
So Follow the Leader was released on August 18th, 1998, and featured multiple guests like Ice Cube, Trey Hartson from Farside, Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit, and Cheech Marin or Marine. For the secret track Earache My Eye. Remember, that was when we had secret tracks. You know, you had that long
God,
silence.
I miss those secret
and
tracks.
This one was the da-da-dun. You know what song I'm talking about? Mama sucker to me trying to tell me how to live. Da-da-dun. So that song.
No, that whole record was
the song is from Cheech and Chong Up in Smoke. When Cheech is dressed up in the tutu and shit, it's in the movie. It's how, so the movie culminates in them ending up at the show where they're performing. And my dad used to sing that song a lot when I was a kid. And I had no fucking idea what he was talking about. I just know that randomly my dad would just start going, "Mama sucka to me trying to tell me how to live. And I'm like, "That, what?" And then obviously when I got old enough, I think it was when Beavis and Butthead first came out. And people were all concerned about Beavis and Butthead and all the crazy shit that they did and that type of comedy and stuff. And my dad just related it all to Cheech and Chong. And because he had the cassette
tape. That's fair enough.
He had the cassette tape of Up in Smoke, you know, and it was great, man.
I had no idea that was a Cheech and Chong song.
Oh, so when they did that, that was like, I'm like, that's when Brandon's life was fully coming together, because it's like, this is a song that I know from this movie that I've enjoyed. My dad used to sing it all the time. And now my favorite band is performing this song.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's beautiful, man. So prior to the album's release, they went on a political campaign-style tour where they took a chartered jet across North America. Seriously? They talked to fans and answered questions at special fan conferences. So they didn't play. Is that right?
I don't believe so. I think they just kind of toured and they just answered questions and then they just kind of kept moving along.
That's so awesome. What a sweet way to do it.
And obviously... this album was a gigantic success. It's still the biggest one that Korn has ever come out with. It hit number one on the Billboard 200 and sold more than 268,000 copies in its first week of release. And this is the one that everybody remembers because it's the one that has the songs that you're about to talk about.
Yeah. So, and the two big songs from the album, dude, you're right, man. I remember when Got the Life dropped, it fucking exploded.
Like
it went
the Ferrari.
Straight to number one. In Australia, it went straight to number one.
Like the Ferrari
like,
in the video.
Instantly. Remember? Yeah. And Freak on a Leash.
Wasn't real, by the way. Wasn't real.
What are you talking about?
So they have all the different scenes that they shot. And I think it was, is it David and Fieldy? I think they're cruising around in a Ferrari and they drive it like off a cliff. And then it shows it flying through the air and then it crashes down and it explodes.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was a shell. Like it wasn't the real Ferrari. They didn't actually destroy like a $300,000 car.
Oh, well, they should have.
Yeah.
So going back to the two big songs, Got the Life, Freak on a Leash. They got a lot of radio airplay as well as being frequently featured on MTV's TRL. Got the Life ended up becoming TRL's first retired video. Freak on a Leash would eventually be retired 7 months later. What does retired mean?
I think the way that MTV wanted to function was, so obviously TRL meaning Total Request Live. So it started out where they would play the full music videos. And then it got to the point where they were just playing a 5 second clip in between a bunch of other stuff. And I think they put the retired video thing in there because they wanted to dictate what made it on the list. And if a song had been around for too long and people were still voting for it, they were like, we got to get it the fuck out of here. So we have to figure out a way that we're able to move on from this song where it's not, you just can't vote for it anymore. It's almost like an homage. Because it's this big song,
or it's graduated to the black belt status of like
exactly okay. Like it's been retired, it's moved on. We no longer have to really worry about it anymore. Because when it comes to this TRL stuff, like this was my wife's introduction to Korn. Because back then, we talked about this when we were talking about Woodstock and Ozfest and stuff like that, and we were talking about how at Woodstock, MTV being on site, they were really hated on. Like because it was, hey, why are you guys playing Britney Spears and NSYNC, but also Korn and Limp Bizkit? Like, give me my rock and shit. So
remember when you could say that to a radio station? Now those stations are just gone.
Rock radio's dying, man. So Freak on a Leash,
dying,
it ended up winning a Grammy for Best Music Video, short form, and received a nomination for Best Hard Rock Performance. It also earned 9 MTV Video Music Award nominations, winning for Best Rock Video and Best Editing.
Nice. So Follow the Leader has gone on to multi-platinum status. It's their best-selling album. I think most people I know there are some people that are like, yeah, Follow the Leader is their best album. And then you get to Issues and you get to Untouchables. And that's when the production started to really go insane. Like the low end, the experimentation. And there's a lot of people who were diehard Korn fans and music fans that were like, they're gods now. But they weren't as popular. Like the songs weren't really as popular. Arguably, some of the songs were better. Like some of the singles off Issues and Untouchables were really fucking amazing.
Falling away from me.
Yeah. Like those, like when they drop into Falling Away from Me live, the crowd goes ballistic. Like fucking love that song. And my thing was always, I wish I could remember the name of it, but it's the one that had the video clip. It was the first time we saw Jesse. Jesse, when he was like 19 years old, Pinkman from Breaking Bad.
Oh.
He was in the first single for Untouchables for that song, which is called fucking, what is it? It's on the tip of my tongue.
Wasn't Here to Stay the first one off Untouchables?
No, yeah, you're right. It was the second single or something else. But it's amazing. Do jado do gap, do do dado do gap, do do dado da 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 da, do do gap. It's such a good fucking song. It's funny I can remember the riff. That's how good Korn riffs are.
Of my fantasy.
Yeah,
it's a great melody. Those
melodies. The fact that he comes up with those melodies, they sound like. This is the thing that makes Jonathan Davis truly amazing. His melodies are nursery rhymes. He writes nursery rhyme melodies, which is why I got that part of their brand at the beginning when they were like, yo, Korn's written like a 5-year-old. They've got the girl on the swing on the first thing. It's like the monsters under your bed coming to life at night and they're singing those dark. They have that song on
Chutes and Ladders
on the self-titled album, which was,
Chutes and Ladders.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole thing was very much like where the monsters that come to life at night and fuck up your bedtime lullabies. Every song of theirs has a lullaby quality to it, a kid's jingle. And that's why their songs are so fucking good. And it's John. And that's Jonathan Davis just being fucking awesome.
So, I mean, that's going to kind of do it for all the factoids and stuff that we kind of gathered up here. I did have one Korn story.
Bring it
too, because I want to get your feedback on this. Oh, I think I've told you this story before. So when I was living in Eugene, I was working for NRQ, the radio station. And so it was when their Greatest Hits album was coming out. And that was when they covered Another Brick in the Wall and Word Up. And so that's when I got to interview Jonathan Davis, because he was not only, they were promoting that album, but they were also promoting, excuse me, the tour, the Greatest Hits tour. And yeah. So my boss, Al Scott, who we've spoken to, and he talked about the whole Limp Bizkit thing. He told me, like, first of all, he got me the interview because he knew I was such a diehard Korn fan. He's like, look,
that's awesome.
He's like, I got this one for you. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, that's how cool of a guy Al is. Like, Al is the shit. Yeah. So, and then when it came to the actual concert, he told me, he's like, I don't really want to go deal with the stuff, so you can run all the meet and greets. And I was like, huh, no shit.
Yeah.
So the first meet and greet we did was with Chevelle. Chevelle was on that tour. And that's the one where we're kind of hanging out backstage. It's me and like four winners. And the guy who's setting it up, he's like, so we're going to put the table here. The band is going to sit here. And then you guys stand on the side. And then you shuffle through and they'll sign whatever you have. And I'm like, there's like four of us, man. Really? So the band comes out and they're like looking around. And he goes, we don't really want to sit there. You guys just want to hang out for like 15 minutes? And so everybody's like, fuck yeah. So we're like, dude, just sat there and just shot the shit with Chevelle. Like, they were super fucking cool, man. Like, they were like the coolest guys on the planet. We just hung out with them for like 15 minutes until they had to go get
Chevelle
ready.
Or Korn?
Chevelle. So right, then the yeah. Korn, so when the Chevelle meet and greet's over, I go to walk out and I've got all the passes and shit on my, you know, to get around. Nobody's saying anything to me because I'm like stuck on my jacket and stuff. So I end up by Craft Services where they're all eating dinner.
Right.
And I'm still wondering if I missed out on an opportunity, because I look over and about 20 feet over away, I see Jonathan Davis scooping spaghetti. He's putting it on his plate. Right. And I see the rest of the band over there. And I'm guessing their families and all these other people. And I was like, fuck, I should just go grab a plate. I hadn't eaten. I was hungry. I was like, yeah. I should just go grab a plate of spaghetti and eat with the band. And right. I didn't.
Okay.
Like, I legitimately, like, I sat there and I just chickened out. I was like, what if I get yelled at? What if I get kicked out? Because I was like, I got my NRQ jacket on and it's big, bold NRQ letters. So I'm representing the radio station.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure what the protocol is, because I was going to go over there and I was just going to scoop it up. And then I saw Jonathan sit down and there like was only a couple people at his table. And I was going to go grab some spaghetti and I was going to go sit down next to him and just start a conversation.
Yeah. Right.
So yay or nay? Should I have done that?
The answer is 100% yay. I'm really sorry, man. I was waiting for there to be something of like...
No, I just chickened out. I'm asking you that because you could give me some insight on like, yeah, they don't really like that, or you know, like
the difference is you're working with the radio station. You are the host of the evening. It's the thing that's funny is that for me, I can tell you, don't get me wrong. There's no version of this where I'm possibly insinuating that anyone would feel that way about me. Jonathan Davis is Jonathan Davis. However, if I was in the situation where I was headlining a show for a radio station, which I've done, and I go and get some food and I sit down and I see the radio DJ or the guy from the station over there, I assume he's going to come and talk to me because we're working together that day. And I've come into town and it's like, we don't see each other every day and we're working together that day. I would actually assume if he didn't come and sit with us, that he doesn't like me. I would assume I've done something wrong.
Okay, so first of all, he never saw me. Like, I was far enough away that he never saw me just like...
Well, no, but to my point, you welcome the person from the station, unless you're an idiot like... you know, like Bush, the singer from Bush, when he's like, get that guy away.
Oh, yeah, like Gavin kicked everybody out.
Or if you're Perry Farrell, like, fuck that radio station. But if you've got half a brain... When you're playing their town, doing their show, and they're playing you on the station, and someone from the station comes up, I would have stopped almost any conversation I was having to say to the radio guy, hey, man, sit down. Let's hang out. Tell me what's been up.
Well,
let's have a chat.
So I mean, I guess we're kind of technically working together, but we weren't, like, it wasn't our show. Like, we're just there.
Dude, no, there's no version. There's no, if you had gone up to Jonathan Davis and literally all you got to say, you got your jacket on. He knows you're with the station. And you say, hey, man, I'm with the station. Is this seat taken? And then you sit down. He's not going to say, yeah, it's taken. He's going to be like, oh, yeah, no, you're with the station. Yeah, sit down. I don't want it to get back to the station that you asked me and I was like, fuck off. Even if I mean, countless times, seriously, dude, the amount of times that I've had people who work at stations, you go back around years later and they're like, dude, I met you when I was an intern and you were so cool to me, man. I was just getting coffee. And now I'm fucking like one of the main head DJs here 5 years later. And I never forgot that. So you just be nice to everyone. Even if they don't work at the station.
God, we got to get there. Fine, fuck it. We're going to have to interview him on History of Rock. So then I can bring it up to him directly and be like, hey, would you be cool with
it? I've never had a full conversation with Jonathan. I've met him twice because of Aaron Lewis. Because Aaron and I are friendly. We were pretty tight when I was touring. We used to hang out a lot, but we've lost touch recently. But he would actually introduce me to... I would literally go up and hang out with Aaron when I knew Jonathan Davis or Fred Durst was around, just to be like, hey, man, I'm just going to be in this fucking area so that if they come by, because you know him, and he would introduce me. Yeah, no, but he would. I remember when he introduced me to Jonathan Davis, and I was like... Jonathan was talking about something to do with fishing, because Aaron's all about fishing. Something to do with fishing,
yeah,
hunting,
he's a country
whatever.
Boy.
Yeah. And I was there and I was just hanging out and I sort of pretended to be on my phone so it wasn't awkward. But in my head, I'm like, yo, man, it's Jonathan Davis. Can you say, hey, this is Shim, you know, whatever. And eventually he's like, oh, man, hey, this is Shim. He's from Sick Puppies. And Jonathan goes like, who? Don't get me wrong. I remember as it happened, I was like, that's fucking awesome. That's fantastic. That's perfect. And he was like, Sick Puppies. They're playing right before us. And I was like, oh, cool. Hey, man, what's up? Shake the hand. Cool. Back to the conversation. And I was like, cool. That's what happened. Jonathan Davis has no idea who the fuck I am. But I thought it was so sweet of Aaron to presume that he's heard of the band. He's like, yeah, you know Sick Puppies. Like, this is the guy. I'm like, nah, yeah. Never fucking heard of him.
Ah. All right. Well, I guess that settles it. So there's some major aspirations that we have here for the History of Rock podcast. One of which is to sit down with Rage Against the Machine when they're here in the Borderland next February, and then obviously now we got to book Jonathan Davis to come on so I can tell him, hey, this was the situation back then.
Yeah.
Would you have been cool if I had come over?
You want to ask him that? I guess
I don't know.
We should.
Fuck.
And now
see,
it's a thing.
But see, well, but God damn it. Because in my head, this is the negative part of me where it's like, yeah, just go over there. Like, just go over there. Like, it's not the end of the goddamn world. He's not going to fucking yell at you.
Dude, like, I was the opposite, man. I remember, and this is the thing that I always found really funny. Gerard Way from My Chem, when we played the big day out in 2006, Black Parade had just dropped. They were the biggest band in the world. And we were fans, man. And we played the big day out. We were opening the main stage and Mike Hem was in the afternoon. And Mike Hem came over and they were still getting over the jet lag and they did an amazing show. And I remember we watched them from the side of the stage and went and the crowd sang every word from every song. And it was amazing. You really felt like you were witnessing a real moment in time. And Gerard was singing, but he didn't fucking need to. They were singing every word of every song back. They were screaming. And they walked off stage and they got their shit together and then they went to craft services. And I literally just walked, dude, I swear to God, I'd never met Gerard. No one had introduced us, nothing. And he was there with his security guy, just eating, just minding his own business. I went up and just sat down right next to him and I was like, dude, how does it feel to have everyone singing that shit back to you, man? That has got to be amazing. And he was like, yeah, man, it's really cool. Yeah. I said, man, oh, my name's Shim. I was in Sick Puppies. I opened up the stage, man. Like, we're going to be out with you guys for like six shows. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool, man. Okay, great. You had a good show? Yeah, man, my show was great. Not as good as yours, but, you know, and I'm just fucking going. I'm just fucking laying it down until eventually he's there. And I realize, I'm like, wow, I'm talking a lot. I'm nervous. And then after about a minute, the security guard goes, Gerard, yeah, that thing, yeah, we got to go, right? And he's like, uh-huh, yeah, we got to go. Okay, cool. Yeah, bye. And the security guard bailed him out. And I was like, huh, cool. I'm never talking to him again. That's never going to I mean, I was 23, 24. I was so nervous. But the funny thing is, the next time that I spoke to him was years later, and it was at a festival in Europe. Huh?
Did you bring that up?
No, I didn't bring it up. I'm sure he remembered because I was fucking annoying. I mean, I would remember me. You remember someone who's that obnoxious, right? And I was walking around. It was long after we'd had several hits and we're in a totally different part of our career and we're doing great. We're over in Europe. And I'm like, hey, MyChem is playing and we're going to watch. And I'm just walking around the back and I see this guy with one of those silly hats on back when they were trendy for a minute, the ski hats for like 6 months they were really in. And he's wearing one. And he's like, and he just... And I just hear from somewhere over there, and he's like, "Hey, Sham, hey." And I'm looking. He's like, and it's Gerard. And I was like, "Hey, man." He was like, "Hey, man, what's up? How you doing? Yeah, you love the new song, man. And what are you doing? Did you guys play already?" And he's just fucking talking to me like we're bros, and I'm like, "This is not how I thought it would go."
Do you think maybe like, he had like a come to Jesus moment later or something like that?
No, I think it was just like if he did remember me, he let it go because he was like, all right, you guys you're a real band now. We were not a real band the first time. We just started touring.
You were a young puppy.
Yeah. And then we did a handful of shows with them and they were really cool to us. And we hung out backstage and we talked. And I remember talking to the guitar player a bunch. And I always thought it was really hilarious when you'd meet Ray and his voice was so high that it would shock you for a second because he has an almost comically high voice. That's how he can hit the high harmonies. And you'd go, man, he's a great singer. And then you'd meet him and go, damn, your voice is really that high. Shit. Love you, Ray. Love you. Nothing but respect. So
can you hear the
music? So anyway, I could hear the music, but I totally didn't know when we were going to be. I figured you'd wind me up.
Oh, no, that's why I was turning it up.
Oh, yeah, I could hear it a little bit.
Just barreled right through the stop sign.
I just barreled right through it. All right.
All right, I'm going to pick it up right here. All right. So anyway, no, not quite yet. We'll get to My Chemical Romance at some time, but we got an encore coming up here. Remember, we got remix episodes that drop every Wednesday. You can check them out on my YouTube channel, at The Real Brandalorian. You can check me out on TikTok as well. It is at Goat The Brandalorian. Shim is at Shim on Instagram. Look for the blue check mark at Shim Moore on TikTok. And then also he is at Shimon Moore on YouTube. So on that note, his name is Shim. He is the rock star.
His name is Brandon. He is the DJ.
Class dismissed. That's all right.
We just made it.
That one. Yeah. Oh, my God. All right, here. Wait, you're not dying, are you? Are you good?
No, dude. I'm so... You know what the truth is? Well, let me find the name of it. I'm going to drop it. Are we doing the encore right now?
Yeah, we're in the encore as we speak.
Hold on a second. I know we're in the encore. I want to find it and make sure I don't fuck up the name.
Fuck up the name, mate.
Million on Mars. The fuck is Million on Mars is an NFT game that reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to work on a song for one of the NFTs they're doing? So I got it. I wrote the song, sang the song down, did it all in about 6 hours, sang for six straight hours. Blew my fucking voice out. That's how out of practice I am. It's fucking pathetic.
Atta kid. All right. Well, one of the things I wanted to bring up on this encore, because this episode, this one be dropping on the 24th. And next week we're going to be covering Rob Zombie because, you know, it's Halloween. So one of the polls that I put up on YouTube. So again, anybody who's listening or watching here on YouTube, if you would be so kind, make sure you're subscribing because then you'll see my polls start to pop up on YouTube. And this one was, the villain you choose is protecting you from the other three. Which movie monster are you picking to protect you? And
oh, wow.
The options were Jason, Freddy, Leatherface, and Michael Myers. Who do you think is winning? I would go with Freddy because
yeah,
he seems the more supernatural. I think everybody's got to sleep at some time, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, even the way the movie ended, it's technically Jason cuts off Freddy's head, but he winks at the camera when it's over. So,
yeah, I would go with Freddy. Is everyone else going? You think everyone's going to go with Freddy?
Well, right now, 61% of people have gone with Jason.
That's weird.
20% of people, yeah, 20% have gone with Michael Myers, 16% have gone with Freddy, and then 3% have gone with Leatherface. And I think I would go with Freddy as well, just because if he's protecting you, I mean, I guess I would just try to fall asleep. I don't know. I mean, this is a weird one. But yeah, so that's what the numbers are going. And so if anybody wants to check those things out, make sure that you guys do that.
When are we, going to do one of those simultaneously on both our socials? We got to pick one to do on those.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we might do something for Rob Zombie.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, let me see if we can come up with something for the old Zombinator. Also, so another thing I was going to bring up here with Halloween right around the corner is horror movies. Yeah. Do you have a go-to horror movie that you like to watch?
That's
every
the funny
Halloween
thing, man. Like, I've never. I know several people that are deeply dedicated to like Jamie. It's his fucking thing. Like, and my best friends, a lot of the people that I like the most, they're into horror movies. Never really got into them. But
you
if
can
I had
tell
if,
when you go, when you check out Jamie's stream on Twitch, unless he's changed it recently, can tell he's definitely heavy into the horror thing.
Genre. But no, my stuff always goes back to the old Frankenstein ones and Nosferatu. Mm-hmm. I'm always into the classic horror films, just because I like watching the way that the films used to get made and stuff like that, and the time that it would take, and being like, oh my God, I can't believe this shit used to be scary. But when it comes to actually getting scared, I know that It was a big deal.
The original?
The new It movie.
It was.
The original
one,
and the new one.
The second one wasn't. The sequel. So you have the original, you have the remake, and then you have a sequel to the remake. The sequel to the remake was meh. Original, dope, and even the new one was damn good.
Right. Yeah, I've heard those ones are more of a mindfuck. I like the mindfuck ones. I don't like the blood and gore ones. Just personal taste. If I'm going to go on a ride, I'd like to just sit there and feel like, that's the thing that Scream used to make fun of. Don't open the door.
I got it. So this whole month, I've been doing a lot of different things on different horror movies and kind of where they come from and what's the inspiration for this. And, you know, maybe this is something that you didn't know about that. Mm. But the one movie that I lucked into was Trick or Treat. And it's all about Halloween night. I believe it takes place in Ohio. It was Ohio or Pennsylvania. And
have you got like 2 weeks worth of shorts that are just about horror movies for Halloween week?
Not two full weeks, but I do have it's peppered in there. I mean, I do other things that are around like sports and stuff like that. It's Warren Valley, Ohio is where it takes place. So there's I believe there's four storylines really that kind of take place in this town on Halloween night. Anna Paquin is in it as well. It has actors in it where you'd be like, oh yeah, that guy. Do you remember the kid from Bad Santa?
Yeah.
He's in it as well. Okay. But there's a lot of people in it who you would recognize in this movie, and it's incredibly well done. And the way that I stumbled into it was a free giveaway. I was doing Goat's Gore Geeks for the radio station in Florida. And that's where I would, you know, we would do all these horror themed stuff. We would do movie nights. We ended up doing this where they would give me, when they would get a movie in for a giveaway, they would give me a copy and I would review it. And this was one of the movies. And I was like, holy shit. Like when I was done with this movie, I'm like, that is a really, really good movie. And
it wasn't as successful.
And I don't even think it was ever released in theaters.
What?
Yeah, I think it went straight. Yeah, what? I think it went straight to DVD. And because I think I saw a story that this Halloween it's going to be released. It's actually coming to theaters. And then I also saw a story that said that Trick or Treat 2 is in the works. It's a really good movie. I would recommend it to anybody. It's like, especially because it gives you that really cool kind of Halloween vibe. If there's something, because I tried to tell my wife. I was like, we need to come up with a list of the movies that we want to watch, you know, during the Halloween season. We watched some of the stuff they have on Disney, like the Mickey Mouse Halloweens. You always got to watch the, you know, Ichabod Crane. You got to watch The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. We just watched Hocus Pocus 2 over the weekend.
I reckon they should make a modern day Halloween, like modern day Halloween romp, like one of those comedies like Weekend at Bernie's, but set it at Halloween and have a comedy that's based around Halloween instead of a slasher film. They don't really have many Halloween comedies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think there's still another Halloween movie coming out this year. It's supposed to be the last one.
Is she still making them? Jamie Lee Curtis?
I think she's in this one too. Yeah, I think she's in, because remember, Rob Zombie made a couple of them, and you know that originally Halloween wasn't just supposed to be Michael Myers. I think it was the third one was Season of the Witch. Michael Myers
was supposed to be new characters in it.
It was supposed to be a whole new storyline, and then when they brought it back, I think it was with Halloween 4. That's when they brought in Danielle Harris, and that was kind of her big coming out party to the to the kind of horror genre. It was Halloween. So Halloween 1 and 2, and then there was Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, and then of course it went right back to Michael Myers. Man, I've seen some of these movies in the theater. I was doing one today. I was working on a short. I was writing it up about the Blair Witch Project. Did I ever tell you about how many times I saw that the day it came out?
No. Three times in the same day. Three. That's how much you liked it.
Well, okay, so here's the deal. So yeah, I liked it. It's a great movie. But what would happen is I went and saw like a matinee with some friends. And then as I was leaving, and I mean, then this movie was selling out. Like these lines were huge at this one movie theater. Yeah. So as I was leaving, I would run into a different group of friends. And they would be like, oh yeah, like we're in line for tickets. Come watch it again, man. And I'm like, I don't have any money. Like, we'll pay for your ticket. And I'm like, fucking cool, man. So I jumped back in line. I watched it again. Left again. There was another group of friends again that were like, come watch it. So I watched it three times the day that it came out. And the cool thing about it is I wonder if people really remember the marketing that was behind the Blair Witch Project.
Oh,
where
they
created the website. They had IMDb go in and basically say that the actors, like from the story, the three actors, that they were missing, presumed dead. It's what it said on their IMDb page.
Right. And so they make them. See, this is the thing that one of the things that I'm going to make one of my shorts about that I remember was when I'm going to have to do a bit of research on it, but was when I remember that the Blair Witch Project was created as a marketing bet. Have you heard this?
I haven't heard that part of the story.
This is the thing that, because I was trying to figure out like, all right, well, what's some fun things that maybe people don't know as much? And the reason that the Blair Witch Project became as successful as it did was because there were these two, I've got to look into the details, but basically two people that worked at film marketing companies that do the marketing. And they were like, I bet I could take any of these films in your trash bin that you have passed on, that you think are unmarketable. I bet I could market any film. They had a bet. And they were like, all right. And so they picked it. They were like, here is this fucking, this home movie thing that's been like, it's a piece of shit. It just drags on for ages. Doesn't have a soundtrack. It's just an indie film. These guys, they didn't quite hit the mark. And they went, all right. So they said, all right, we're going to put together a marketing plan. And then once they brought the marketing plan to the company looked at it and actually said, this might work. This will be a really interesting experiment because the film costs nothing. They bought the rights for like 50 grand for the whole fucking movie or whatever. And they said, all right. So they marketed it and said, what if we pretend that it's real? And we market it and we tell everyone it's real. We do exactly what you said. We do the website. We call the actors and we say, listen, don't make any appearances. We're gonna buy your film, but we're going to market it a really different way. And we're going to try. And they started to do it and started to get traction and they went with it and they ran the board. And it turned, they were able to turn a $50,000 film with like a $1 to $1.5 million marketing plan, just doing it the right way. And then it grossed $100 million fucking dollars. But the whole thing was basically a marketing experiment to see, can we get these people to believe it's real for a while? And go and see it, thinking it's real, and do the whole story.
Are you sure that's a real story?
Yeah. The reason that Blair Witch actually got picked up was because it was a marketing experiment. That's why they went as hard as they did on trying to make people believe, no, this is real. It's a real
video. Dude, I remember. So my buddy Alan, who I game with now, anybody who's watching this on my stream, you know exactly who Alan is. I remember sitting in his basement on the computer, just scouring the website.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, like it says they found the footage here. Yeah. And this is, and it was like, oh my God. Like, it was, you know, obviously now we know, like, oh yeah, like everything on the internet's kind of like bullshit.
Yeah. But back then it was the perfect timing for people to go. And then the idea that you're going to put it's effectively a snuff film. if it's true, it's a snuff film, and they're going to put it in cinemas and charge tickets.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's all fucking, like, we bought that shit, well, hook, line, and sinker at the
time.
Well,
I don't think they would have, like, I don't think anybody saw it as a snuff film. I think what they saw it as is, you know, it was actual found footage where they weren't going to actually show the kids dying. Like.
No, but it's,
dude,
like.
Dude, how perfect was that ending with the dude standing in the corner?
Dude, I remember the feeling of cold that came over me. When that happened, I was like, you could feel the cold of the basement when that camera just stayed on that shot. And it was like, really fucking, as I'm saying it, I'm getting that feeling again. Like, they did such a good job at the ending of that movie. And I remember the first time that I watched it, I made the mistake of watching it alone at a friend's house. And she passed out. And I was like, and for some reason, I'm watching the movie, and then one of her friends buzzes at like 2 o'clock in the morning from downstairs. And he's like, hey man, is Kat there? And I'm like, yeah, she's asleep. He's like, yeah, I just need to crash, man. I stayed too long at the bar and she lets me crash sometimes. And I'm like, fucking, and I'm watching Blair Witch and I'm like, now there's a guy I don't know wants to get into the house. And I'm like, it was so weird. It was.
Did you let him in?
Yeah. I had to wake her up and say, there's some fucking guy here. And she's like, okay. Oh, you know, so yeah, it was, yeah, but it was fun.
That's fine. All right.
Anyway.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that. That was good. That was a good encore. So we can wrap it up.
That was a good encore.
And yeah. We'll be looking forward to next week when I still haven't decided if it's going to be Rob Zombie or White Zombie. Because
whichever one's more interesting.
Do you know what I might actually do?
What?
I might actually just do a House of a Thousand Corpses. It's still rock and roll, baby. Like, we could do that and then come back to Rob Zombie later, but cover him.
That might lead into Rob Zombie nicely.
Yeah, because, that's true. Because if you remember, that movie sat on the shelf for a long fucking time. Mm-hmm. I would scour the internet waiting to see. It was the same thing with Sin Jin Smith, the unreleased Jonathan Davis movie that he did with Rowdy Roddy Piper. It's never, like, it wasn't completed. Rowdy Roddy Piper has since passed away, and it just kind of sat on the shelf. And I was hoping that wasn't going to happen with House of a Thousand Corpses. I still remember like exactly where I saw it and went with my buddy Brett and his dad. We showed up late, so I think the first 10 minutes I missed and I was pissed. But yeah, let's plan on doing that. We'll do House of a Thousand Corpses.
Okay. I can
dig it. Next week's episode. So cool. Then on that note,
so does that mean that I need to brush up on that movie?
You should watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to brush up on that.
When's the last time you watched it?
I've never seen it. I didn't want to say it on the podcast, but no, I've never seen it.
Fuck, I'm in the middle of watching it now. I'm literally in the middle of watching it now. I've seen it probably a dozen times.
Is it a gore film?
I mean, there's gore moments in it, yeah. Like, there's some weird shit. And this is going to be the final thing. It's going to lead into the next episode. There's one scene from the movie that really made my stomach weak. But I don't think it's anything that would have made anybody else's stomach weak. Like, okay. I this one part hit me odder than I think a lot of other people would have seen it hit. So what's that?
Was it a guy dressed up in a Chewie costume?
No. Oh. Chewbacca.
I love. I can imagine the sound of Chewie getting stabbed.
I hate you, man. Why would you do that?
Now you'll never have it.
All right. On that note. Say bye, everybody. Oh, God.